I'm Rachel Otwell for Illinois Edition. Curtis Lovelace spent nearly 2 years in custody as he faced charges for the death of his former wife, Corey. Earlier this month, in a second trial, he was found not guilty. The Quincy native had attended the University of Illinois on a football scholarship and worked as a prosecutor. After the first case resulted in a mistrial, Bill Clutter of Investigating Innocence decided to help in his defense. After Corey Lovelace died on Valentine's Day 2006, the autopsy report was not able to point to a specific cause of death. Years later, an investigator reopened the case, alleging Curtis had suffocated his wife. Curtis claimed she had had the flu and was already sickly due to alcoholism and bulimia. The original pathologist at the time found she had had a condition related to alcoholism called steatosis, or fatty liver. Here's Bill Clutter to explain more about the case and why the original cause of death was declared as undetermined.
Because with steatosis, you know, it's not like with a heart attack where you can actually see the blood clot. With steatosis, there's really no smoking gun where you can attribute the cause of death to that disease.
Jessica Bowman ended up being a pathologist who agreed with the prosecutors that the cause of death could have been suffocation. Tell us more about that.
To her credit, she's the one that flagged for further investigation a cut under Corey's lip. She indicated could be suspicious of suffocation, but one of the things that she said was that there was no particular hemorrhaging around the eyes and the face, which is common in suffocation cases. The detective who was in charge of the investigation, Jeff Baird from Quincy, went back and interviewed all of the children, and including Curtis, and received information from the oldest child that their mother had fallen a few days earlier, fallen out of bed. And so that was a possible explanation for the cut under the lip. As we later learned in the course of our investigation and information that had been withheld from the defense, which is clearly a Brady violation, Detective Adam Gibson withheld email communications with Dr. Scott Denton from Bloomington, where Dr. Denton had pointed out that this was an old injury. Cut under lip was at least several days old, which is consistent with the reports that Corey had fallen out of bed. Case was closed. This wasn't even a homicide investigation. It was a death investigation originally.
And it's probably worth noting, too, that inconclusive pathology reports are not unheard of. Like you said,
right. An undetermined cause of death occurs often when there's no clear evidence one way or the other as to the cause of death. In the autopsy report, Dr. Bowman listed as a potential cause of death steatosis, which can cause sudden death, according to her autopsy report. So you had, by all accounts, at the time this occurred, this was a natural death. 8 years later, what changed is that Kurt had remarried a woman named Erica Gomez. Kurt filed for divorce in December of 2012. It was a very contentious divorce where she made unreasonable demands financially. She wanted to live in the marital residence. The court later ordered her out and gave possession to Kurt. And during the course of this divorce, she had threatened his friends that bad things would happen to Kurt if he didn't capitulate to her demands in the divorce. And what happened was that in March of 2013, she filed an unfounded allegation of domestic abuse to the Army National Guard. By this time, Kurt was a JAG officer. She was, Erica Gomez was also a career National Guard member of the Army. This allegation was, the allegation that she made occurred almost a year earlier, where she filed no police report, filed no order of protection, and the incident that she described in her own words to the Army National Guard was simply a verbal argument with no evidence of any physical contact. And that was easily dismissed by the Army National Guard. This later becomes the theory of the prosecutor that Kurt, based on this unfounded allegation, that the jury should hear the testimony of Erica Gomez. And I think what the jury saw was why Kurt Lovelace is sitting in the defendant's chair. I think Erica Gomez was the first person to make the accusation that Kurt killed his first wife. And she did it on September 19, 2013, in a text message that she sent to Kurt's oldest child, his daughter. And this was after Erica Gomez had seen Kurt on a date with his current wife, Christine. And within minutes after seeing them together, she sends a text message to his daughter that your dad's at a bar, which was untrue. He was eating dinner. Erica Gomez was at the bar. And the next thing she says is that your dad killed your mom. Within a few weeks later, Detective Adam Gibson, in December of 2013, opens a homicide investigation. And this is around the time when Curtis is being married to Christine on December 26, 2013. And so I feel very strongly that this is a case where the allegations of an ex-wife that turned out to be unfounded when she claimed domestic abuse, and also unfounded when she made her claims that Kurt had killed his first wife.
So you're basically saying some revenge was taking place, sort of thing.
I think that's a fair statement. I think it's a fair statement. I think the evidence bears that out.
There had to be a little bit more to it, of course, than this claim, perhaps. Why did Detective Gibson end up reopening the case?
Well, you know, that's a very good question, and I don't think he's sufficiently answered that when asked in court. I suspect that the allegations of Erica Gomez were communicated to Gibson, and that's the reason he opened his homicide investigation. Because one of the accusations she made was that Kurt had, after he moved out of the marital residence in December of 2012, that he slipped in and poisoned her and her daughter. This allegation wasn't made to the Army National Guard. She used that to support her belief that Kurt had killed his first wife. And the truth is, she didn't go to the doctors when she was ill with flu-like symptoms in December of 2012. And there was testing of her hair that was done by Adam Gibson to support her allegation that she had been poisoned. And those test results showed that there was no evidence of poisoning. There was evidence of lithium. You know, that's to treat bipolar disorder. But there was no evidence that Kurt Lovelace had poisoned her.
Bill Clutter of Investigating Innocence, he helped the defense in a case that alleged Curtis Lovelace had killed his previous wife, Corey. He was found not guilty earlier this month. So there was a trial before the one that was just happened, obviously, where there was a mistrial because the jury was split and the detective was able to find a pathologist or two who did support his theory about the suffocation. Is that right?
Right. But what Detective Gibson did is he polluted these experts by telling these experts that Kurt Lovelace had attempted to poison his second wife, Erica Gomez. And you'll see that in the email communications between Gibson and Denton. And of course, we know now that the scientific laboratory reports clearly refute that. Just the circumstances of how the allegation came about is belies belief. But nevertheless, Detective Gibson shopped for an expert that would support his theory of homicide after being told by six other medical experts that there was no evidence to support a homicide. And, you know, if someone is conducting a fair and objective police investigation, they don't shop around for an expert and reject the opinions of six medical experts who don't support his theory. It's clearly an investigation that was bent on indicting Kurt Lovelace for murder. That's not how our justice system should work.
So having worked on a variety of cases where people have been exonerated, for instance, for being found guilty, and then later being found that they were actually innocent, how does this case compare in the context of your career overall?
One of the first cases in my career was in 1988 with the case of Rolando Cruz and Alejandro Hernandez. These were two Hispanics who were wrongfully convicted of a very high-profile murder of a 10-year-old girl who was abducted from her home. It turned out that a serial killer had killed her. And in that case, the very same issues of police misconduct that we have in that case also were parallel in the Curtis Lovelace case. In that case, I testified for the special prosecutor who brought charges against seven police officers and prosecutors for obstruction of justice, conspiracy to withhold evidence. And in this case, we have evidence that Detective Adam Gibson deleted his emails, presumably, so that the defense wouldn't gain access to the emails where he had six experts who told him there was no evidence of homicide. And his meetings with the experts, he didn't document what those experts told him. And through our interviews, we know that there were favorable opinions and statements that these medical experts had conveyed to Detective Gibson. And I think in the case that I mentioned with the two Hispanics, Alejandro Hernandez and Rolando Cruz, one of the allegations was that prosecutors had failed to turn over handwritten notes that were exonerating of Rolando Cruz and Alejandro Hernandez. In this case, we have a detective who's deleting emails that are exonerating to Curtis Lovelace. And in fact, it made the difference in this second trial, presenting those emails.
What was it about this case that made you want to take it on?
Well, initially, I was hired by the attorneys in Springfield, J. Elmore and Jeff Page, to investigate Kurt's defense. Unfortunately, you know, the family ran short of money. They had a difficult time coming up with money for expert witnesses. And, you know, I initially had conducted interviews of some of the key witnesses in the case. But after I had every expectation that they would, that Kurt would be found not guilty in the first trial. And after the hung jury, it was 6-6 split. I reached out to John Lovey of the Exoneration Project in Chicago, and I provided him the summary of what I felt was the misconduct of Detective Adam Gibson at withholding information that we knew that was favorable to Kurt. And of course, subsequently, we learned that there was even more evidence of misconduct. Within a few minutes of sending the email to John, I received a reply that he wanted to meet with Christine. And so I facilitated a meeting in Chicago, and the Exoneration Project and John Lovey entered their appearance to defend Kurt. Another interesting thing about the case is that, you know, Kurt, I mean, his wife, Christine, had reached out to me after the hung jury. And, you know, I felt an obligation to continue to assist with his defense. I started an online fundraiser that raised $12,000. And that became an issue with the prosecutor, where he tried to force our hand to spend that money to pay for the experts that testified in the first trial. And the intent of that whole fundraiser was to hire new experts to assist with the retrial. And fortunately, we were able to get others to contribute to his defense. And you know, it's very similar to what this prosecutor did in the Julie Ray case. The Julie Ray case was a case where Julie's ex-husband was beating the drum to have his ex-wife indicted for the murder of her 10-year-old son, who it turned out was killed by a serial killer who was executed in Texas back in 2014. This same prosecutor that prosecuted and convicted Julie Ray is the same prosecutor who listened to the false allegations of Erica Gomez in indicting Kurt Lovelace. And I think that you know, the conduct of the prosecutor in this case should be closely scrutinized.